Not bad. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's topic is actually probably the most relevant topic in terms of contemporary Lashon Hara issues, which is the question of Lashon Hara that comes up with respect to Shiduchim. In other words, they have to translate what Shiduchim are? Right? So Shiduchim are when people try to make matches, and oftentimes you get asked a question about someone and something, and as you ask the question, so you begin to think, one second, am I allowed to say anything, or am I not allowed to say anything?
Am I mandated
to say something? Is it forbidden to say something? I'm going to be asked questions about a person who I know has very serious flaws. What do I do in this case? How does this square with the rules of Lashon Hara? Now, there is one basic rule in Lashon Hara, and that rule is to'elet. To'elet means if there is a real purpose, then it's permitted. That's the basic rule, right? Now, question, conceptually, why is it that to'elet permits Lashon Hara? Again, my friend Rabbi Daniel Feldman, in his book, spends a lot of time on this. It's like page 103.
Proof should be the other way.
So you're saying the burn proof should be which one?
The other one. Like, I think if you want to tell someone something, you probably have a good reason to do it.
Okay. But not all good reasons are halakhically good reasons. Right? So let's give...
I wouldn't say something if I... But something as serious as someone... thinking about marrying someone.
Oh, okay, okay.
That is...
So that's a pretty good reason. The stakes there are pretty high. Agreed. But let's take a step back, because the Shiduch issue is just one part of the larger question of To'elet. And why is it that when I have a good purpose, the Lashon Hara is permitted? There are two ways of looking at it. We could say that when there's a good purpose, it is not Lashon Hara at all. Lashon Hara is damaging speech, and this speech is not damaging. This speech is helpful. That's one way to look at it. But I could look at it in a different sort of way also. I could say, you know what, this speech really is damaging, but the benefit outweighs the damage. Right? That's a very fundamental question as to why it is that I'm allowed to speak Lashon Hara for benefit. Do I assume that it is not damaging speech at all? It's not the Isur of Lashon Hara, because there's To'elet. Or do I say, no, it is forbidden, but sometimes, like, Mashallah Mahadavar Domeh, let's say someone is sick on Shabbos, and you have to take the person to the hospital. No? Do we try to minimize the prohibition? We have, like, thousands of questions of this sort in Judaism, right? The question is called Hutra or Dechuya. Is it absolutely permitted? Or is it just knocked aside, but the prohibition sort of remains in place? Now, Rabbi Feldman argues that there are different sources in the Torah as to why Lashon Hara is forbidden. One source in the Torah is from a pasuk, Lo tisa shem hashav, which means don't say false or useless or purposeless information. If that's the case, when the information is for to'elet, when there's a benefit, it's not false and useless, it's fine. Fine in the sense of zero prohibition. However, another possible source for Lashon Hara being permitted is that the Torah writes, Lo te'leich rachil ba'amecha, then the next pasuk is, Lo ta'amor al damre'echa. And Lo ta'amor al damre'echa means, don't stand by idly when someone's going to suffer. If that's the approach, so we're saying, okay, there's a prohibition, but... you have to weigh it against damaging someone else. Now, differences in these two perspectives, obviously, are how much do you have to weigh the to'elet eventuality? Does it have to be that there's definite to'elet? Or can the to'elet be somewhat far-fetched? I love that word. It's like my favorite Yiddish word, no? Right? Right? Does the to'elet have to be immediate, certainly beneficial, Or does it have to be, or can it be potentially not beneficial, but potentially, yes, beneficial? Right? These questions are very real.
When you address the issue of Lashon HaShidduchim, obviously you want to break up the Shidduchim. Right, what's the point of
another one? Whoa. So we are going to, not necessarily to break it up, but to be, this is like caveat emptor, no? Buyer beware. Buyer beware means, okay, you want to go out with her, you want to go out with him, let me just tell you some information about the guy. Now, also, in Shidduchim, we have to deal with another issue, which is called timing. Right? Do you tell? Is there a difference between when I get a call that my daughter, my son, is interested in going out with so and so, or is that the same as when I get a call they're going out, they're about to get engaged? Right? Is there a difference at some step along the line? These are all issues that we have to address, and we'll start to talk about it after Frieda's question.
Just an aside here.
Yeah.
In English, the expression caveat emptor usually is used in a way of saying, I don't have to tell you anything, it's your responsibility, caveat emptor. It doesn't, doctrine
understood.
Does not mean that I
understood.
Have
to, and we're going to talk about that also in a minute.
The other thing is when you have two people, the shidduch and the shidduchi, the two people, whose interest trumps whose interest? Okay.
Good.
You get some loser individual, male or female.
So again, I don't think we look at winners. I don't think we look at winners versus losers over here. But you might be asking a different question, which is, let's say one side of the potential shidduch asks me a question. Do I have more of an obligation to that side because they asked? Do I assume that my obligation or lack thereof is to divulge information even if they don't ask? I'm not blind. So I walk around the social hall on Mount Sinai on a Friday night, and I notice that there are people who are talking to each other, right? Do I have a Good Samaritan obligation to walk over and say, you know what, don't go out with her. She is a disaster and a half. Him! You know what he does all the time? Right? Do
what
I do that?
Do?
Maybe I do. And we'll talk about that also. So I have a lot to say, and we gotta get to work. Now, just a few comments, preliminary comments that Rabbi Feldman makes. The Chafetz Chaim, False Facts and True Rumors, published by Yeshiva University Press, offset by Magid Press. Okay, so, a few issues that are worth focusing on. The question as to how definite the benefit has to be. The Chafetz Chaim has lots of rules. But if you turn actually to the last page, I tend to do this all the time, I don't know why, but I put together source sheets and then my source sheets end up being backwards. So the Chafetz Chaim writes, Im echad ro esh chaver rotzel shtatef beze davar im acher, v'umishayer shebevada yisobev lo ayideze inyan ra. Okay, I see that someone wants to partner with somebody else. Now, again, that could be a business relationship, right? That so-and-so is going to partner, or it could be not a business relationship, but a shidduch relationship. So Chafetz Chaim says, if you assess that something bad will definitely come, so then you have to tell him, but right, you need five rules, which I will mention. Rule one, you have to be very careful to think it through carefully. Is this the type of bad thing that will really hurt the guy? Two, you cannot increase how bad the thing is at all. In other words, if the guy is a horse thief, don't say he's a bank robber, right? I'm assuming bank robbers are worse than horse thieves, right? Don't say that, right? Don't increase it at all. B, C, whatever. Your intention has to be completely to help out. Let's say you have a vested interest. You hate that guy. Even though you think you are saying everything 100% correct, the Chafetz Chaim says you're not allowed to talk. Because we are worried, we spoke last week about these unconscious biases. We're worried that since you hate that guy, you're not going to present the information objectively. Four, the Chafetz Chaim says, I can only speak if there is no other way of preventing the deal to come to fruition. Meaning, right? And the Chafetz Chaim says, I can only present as much information as necessary to thwart the deal. Meaning, if I could tell you, you trust me, you ask me, I could say, you know what, don't get involved with him. Why not? I'll say, you know what, listen, I know the guy, and sometimes, he doesn't use OU products. Whoa, he doesn't use OU products, right?
Okay.
Right? So if that's enough to disturb the shidduch, if that's enough, you don't have to say, oh, by the way, I know that guy, and the guy spent a lot of time, you know, in the federal penitentiary, and you don't have to say that. Say he doesn't eat OU. It's presumably less of an offense. What the Chafetz Chaim is coming from the perspective that you have to minimize as much as possible. So if my job is to make sure someone doesn't enter a bad business deal, doesn't get into a bad shidduch, if I could get to that point by saying he, she doesn't eat OU, they don't keep Chalav Yisrael, oh my gosh. Ooh, not keeping Chalav Yisrael. What are they? Modern Orthodox, right? So the Chafetz Chaim says that's what you have to do. That's what you have to do. Caroline, you had a comment?
No, I don't have a comment. So the
Chafetz Chaim's basic point is minimize it. Just give me 1 second. The Chazon Ish is quoted as saying there is one rule. The rule is the speech beneficial or not? If it's beneficial, say it. Don't make these whole calculated cheshbonos, blah, blah, blah. Right? You don't do that. Right? You say it. That's what the Chazon Ish is quoted as saying. The Chafetz Chaim, again, it's the standard book on Lashon Hara. It's the Chafetz Chaim. When Chafetz Chaim is taking an approach that we really try to minimize, that it's fundamentally forbidden, and you got to minimize the prohibition. Kalman?
First of all, you say beneficial. You mean to the person you're telling, or to the person you're talking in Lashon Hara?
So again, to the person I'm telling. Right, I'm telling this person, don't make a deal with so-and-so because this person's going to rob you blind. Right? Obviously, it's going to hurt the person I'm telling. The guy I'm speaking about wants to rob him blind.
But you want to minimize.
But I have to, if my job is to make sure that they don't clinch a deal, so I can only say the bare minimum. I can only say, don't make a deal with him. Why not? You know, minimize it. That's what Chafetz Chaim says. The Chazon Ish says, talk.
Don't tell everything the person did.
Well, according to the Chafetz Chaim, don't tell everything. No. The Chazon Ish says, don't make so. I don't know if the Chazon Ish would be in favor of telling everything when it's unnecessary. I don't think so. But the point is, you know, the guy's a bank robber. Say, don't make a deal with him. He's a bank robber. End of conversation. Yes, sir. Maybe I'll tell some stories tonight as we go on.
If you want to say definitely happened, just because someone robbed the last of your apartment doesn't guarantee you'll rob the next one. That's a fair point.
But it's a fair point. And just because the guy was a bank robber, maybe he did tshuva, right? He grew a beard, he looks religious now, he started wearing a gartel, right? He even damaged himself spired, I don't know, but the question as to whether, if you know for sure the guy did tshuva, that's a different story. To argue that maybe he did requires expert advice. This issue actually comes up in the shidduch context. Maybe I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, but you led me that way. One of the big issues that comes up in shidduchim is when someone has mental health issues. So I know that Jack is interested in going out with Jill. I know that Jack had a few very, very serious bouts of depression. Do I say that?
Yes.
Do I say it? Well, a few things.
Yes.
So, right, is there to'elas? Probably. Well, 1 second. Reb Moshe Sternbach writes in the tshuva over here. I give it to you at the bottom of the page. Reb Moshe Sternbach says, you know, if the depression came because of one particular discrete life circumstance, and the experts say that it's unlikely to relapse. There's no family history of depression. It was, right, the guy lost his job and his dog died, and it all happened the same week. Right? So people sometimes get depressed. And you know what? You get over it if it's a discrete thing. If it reflects, right? Now, again, you have to be a real expert to make these calculations. My understanding is, in most cases, you're not such an expert, and this is where what we would say is tell the information and let the other party do with it what they want. Okay, so you know that so-and-so has had bouts with depression, so-and-so has been on various medications. Okay, ask about it. Find out. Inquire. Now, I'm not telling you to break up. I'm just relaying the facts. Okay? So, we'll come back to some of these points later on. But the basic issue, the way we're setting it up, is that there is a fundamental question as to whether Lashon Hara is absolutely permitted when it's for a good purpose, or whether it's forbidden, but we try to say that there's a larger reason why it's going to be okay. Now, let's just talk briefly about some things. Remember, our first point that we made, so the Chofetz Chaim is very firm. So the Chofetz Chaim writes, that if I call you for information, I have to say, you know what? I'm calling about Yentl Dvashke, because I want to make a shidduch with Yentl Dvashke. And, yeah, I'm calling for halachically permitted purposes. It's not Lashon Hara, it's not frivolous, it's not to damage, but tell me what you know. Give me the goods about Yentl Dvashka, because it's a potential shidduch. Chofetz Chaim says you have to reveal that. And the reason why you have to reveal that is because if I don't tell you, so then you are going to say negative stuff. You got the goods on Yentl Dvashka. You're going to say negative stuff about Yentl Dvashka, and you're going to think that you're doing an Aveira. But really, you're not doing an Aveira. Now, if a person thinks they're doing an Aveira, and they're really not doing an Aveira, that itself is an Aveira.
On whose part?
Let's say, I'll give you a case. Let's say I'm hungry. So I walk down 181st Street, I walk into McDonald's, and I order a cheeseburger. And my bad luck, that day when I walk into McDonald's, they ran out of treif meat, they're giving kosher meat, and the cheese that they put on is fake cheese, and they had someone there who koshered the stove beforehand. So my bad luck, right, I end up eating a kosher cheeseburger at McDonald's. Did I do something wrong?
You got a break today.
It's your intention.
So it's not as bad as eating a real treif cheeseburger, but am I a tzaddik?
No, exactly.
Bugadni guzalni. Right? I ain't good. I am really ain't good. That's an Aveira. If you think you're doing an Aveira, even if you don't do an Aveira, it's an Aveira. So therefore, says the Chofetz Chaim, you better say that I am asking about Yentl Dvashka for real halachically permitted purposes, because if not, the guy is going to spill the goods about Yentl Dvashka, and the guy's going to think he's doing an Aveira, and the guy's going to end up, right? That's the Chofetz Chaim's argument. Super from. But Moshe Sternbach says, come on. Moshe Sternbach says, you don't have to give all the disclaimers, because he says, in the case of Lashon Hara for Tzolelas, you're doing a mitzvah. When I go into McDonald's and I eat a kosher cheeseburger, I'm not doing anything that's a mitzvah. It might be permitted, it might be forbidden. It's not a mitzvah. By Lashon Hara, I'm doing a mitzvah when I am saying the negative stuff about Yentl Dvashka so that our innocent Ignaz Pierre doesn't marry Yentl Dvashka, so that...
That's already an intermarriage.
It's already an intermarriage.
He's mentioned that cheeseburger is a mitzvah.
Again?
He's mentioned that cheeseburger.
So that's a big discussion. That's a machlokes between the Rambam and the Raivin. If I eat trade food, for heter purposes, do I bench? Okay, whatever. That's a different conversation. My friend Ellie Fisher, when he was a JLIC rabbi in Maryland, got a few of these questions that people were eating non-kosher, and they asked him, should they bench, whatever. He wrote an article in the RJJ Journal about it at that time. Yeah, okay, fine. So one issue is, do you have to reveal? Moshe Sternbach says, you don't have to reveal why you are calling. There's another issue, which is somewhat...
Why else would you be calling?
Why else... So,
why would you be calling?
So I could be, again, so you're thinking of calling in the phone call. Let's say I walk over to somebody in the social hall and I say, what do you know about, you have no idea why I'm asking about them. Maybe. Hey, okay, I don't know. But
why else would you ask about them? Okay.
I'm asking because I'm a gossip. gossip. I like dirt. Like, come on.
That's
there are lots of websites that are dedicated to finding dirt. You know? So I'm asking about someone named Kardashian. And like, you want to know why I'm asking? I have no idea why. No one knows why anyone would ask about that. It makes no sense.
It's a public
yes.
figure, though. That's different.
Yeah.
The Hubbard's Hubbard is a very impressive person. Yeah. But it seems to me that at times there is a danger of worrying about your own spiritual purity at the expense of somebody else's danger.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm so worried about, God forbid I should say one half a word,
so,
and I'm not telling somebody about
so
that
is,
this
so that is an important point in Lashon Hara. Forget that. You know, one of the problems with our education system in general might be that we focus all on the don't. And maybe we'd be better off if we'd start our conversations about Lashon Hara with the do's.
Yeah.
Do say, right? If someone is a molester, say it!
Yeah.
Right? That's Aleph, Beis, Gimel, all the way. Maybe right before Tov. Maybe, right? Again, that's a totally different perspective, and it might be healthier, but let's be honest, Frida, we live in a world where unfortunately, we start off from this perspective of there's an Isser of Lashon Hara, and then people trying to permit it, which, again, I can't change the whole world, right? I'm just saying that this is a reality that we're dealing with. Now, next. The Chafetz
Chaim. Political gossip.
Political gossip, yeah. So again, there is a question about someone who's considered like a public figure. Is there an assumption that everything is fair game? That's a whole other can of worms. I'd rather not go there tonight. Let's just talk about another aspect that comes up in the Shidduch situation. Which is that, who am I going to ask for information? So here in the Heights, we have apartments where some people live on their own. Most people in the Heights have roommates. So I'm going to be interested in going out with a particular guy, we'll say it that way. So I want information about, I'm going to go out with a guy, and I want information about the guy, so I'm going to call the guy's roommates. Now, okay, that's very nice. Well, the roommate's going to answer the phone, and is going to hear that so-and-so is calling to find out information about the roommate, and the roommate's going to say, you know what, I'm really interested in going out with her. Like, she's kind of hot. And what am I going to do? I'm going to say, oh, you don't want to go out with him. He's a dirtbag. He's awful. He's a disgusting human being. Right? Now, there is a concern that sometimes people who know each other too well, who are too close, might have vested interests, and that might not be helpful. Now, on the other hand, the way Shidduchim work, not in the Mount Sinai world, but in the world outside of Mount Sinai, I don't know if you're aware there is such a thing, but usually you call a neighbor. So you call the neighbor. The neighbor is someone who sits next to the father in Shul every odd week. And what do you know about your friend Shlomi's daughter? Oh, Shlomi's daughter? Wonderful, amazing, great. You really know absolutely nothing. All you know is that you see Shlomi walks to shul with his daughter. That's all you know. You know what she looks like. You would say hi to her in the grocery store. That's the type of person who often gets asked for shidduch information. Is that valuable? Diddly squat. Nothing. Nada. Gornish. Zilch. Right? So now, who you ask for information can be a complicating factor in this whole Lashon Hara conversation, because you have to know that sometimes the person has a vested interest. Like the Chafetz Chaim says, if I hate somebody, I can't give information about them objectively. And maybe I have to worry that that roommate might not be a good source. Mr. Lockerbaum, how are you? Lockerman, yeah.
Isn't the fact that she goes to shul constantly the best line to her?
She
might just go to the Kiddush.
She goes to JFK, she goes to Kiddush. Or maybe Rahman al-Aslan, she goes to Shul because she's like a feministly motivated young woman who feels that her connection to God matters. Right? Who knows? You are like, you're trying to get me in trouble.
I'm trying to clarify a statement that seems to be out of character.
It's not, it's meant tongue in cheek.
Okay.
So one of the issues that has to be addressed is who do you ask? And let's be honest, in our world, the funny thing about finding out shidduch information is that the people who really should be asked aren't asked. And the people who we do ask often volunteer information that they don't really know. And it's really kind of a pointless exercise on many levels. Now,
who should be asked?
Who should be asking? So again, I would say that the way it should work, again, I like this community. I think the way shidduchim work in this community in some ways are healthier, which is that they do far less checking. And then as the relationship builds up, so then either the potential couple ask each other, and if you feel that there's something that requires more investigation, so you investigate. You do it, right? But the way it works in other communities, that we have these extensive pre-dating checks, in Hasidic communities, they often will go out once. And they won't even go out. They'll sit in once. Then they get engaged. No? Now, again, on some level, they are doing very extensive checks. But you have to ask, how much information can you find? Do I really know, even the people who I'm closest with on this planet, do I really know what goes on in their home?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think there are very, very few people who really know me. I think there are very, very few people who I really know. And that itself is something that's worth focusing on. Now, let's just talk about a few other issues. Sometimes I know something about a guy or a girl, and someone calls me, but I don't want to spill the beans. I know that they've been going out, and I convince myself, you know what, maybe I shouldn't say anything, because I'm worried it might hurt the shidduch, and like people begin to doubt themselves or question their own knowledge. And I say, you know what, maybe I'm not going to say anything. Now, sometimes people say, okay, what am I doing wrong? I'm not saying anything. The answer is that no, you have an obligation to say, and you can be in violation of a very serious Torah prohibition if you don't say anything. There is a Torah prohibition called Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mechshol. Now, normally that means don't actively put a stumbling block. Don't actively do something that's wrong. I heard this first from Reb Fivel Cohen years ago. Reb Fivel pointed out from a Gemara in Moed Katan that you could violate Lifnei Iver passively. The Gemara speaks about there's an obligation of Tziyun Kvarot. Tziyun Kvarot means that you go through Eretz Yisrael and you mark off wherever there are graves. And the reason why you're marking off wherever there are graves is that so a Kohen doesn't come by and become Tameh. The Gemara asks, what's the source in Scripture for Tziyun Kvarot? The Gemara answers, according to one approach, Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mechshol. Meaning, if I don't do something, I am causing someone to stumble. I'm being passive. I'm not marking the grave. That's Lifnei Iver.
Before you mention Lo Tamar.
So Lo Tamar Adam Re'echa is the same type of thing. Although Lo Tamar Adam Re'echa, you know, has to be questioned. Is there real loss? Is there not real loss? Is the loss definite? Is it not definite? Right? Are we dealing with loss of life? Are we dealing with loss of money? The answer is both. But Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mechshol, I could say maybe I'm not in violation of Lo Tamod. I'll say, you know what? Speak to somebody else. Investigate. I'm not saying anything. Sometimes you have to say, I got a call a few weeks ago about someone. Someone who I know comes from a very troubled family, and the person is very troubled. And someone called me up and said, what would you say about going out with that person? And I said, listen, this is a very hard thing for me to answer. I would say absolutely not. Don't get near that person with a 10-foot pole. Stay far, far, far away. So he said, why? So I said, listen, the Chafetz Chaim writes that you should try to minimize what you say. What I'll tell you is that the family has some very serious mental health issues. This kid has serious mental health issues. Stay away. Now, did I say the amount of times that that kid has been in real trouble with the law? No, I didn't. According to the Chazon Ish, could I have said that? Probably. Okay? But, again, my feeling was in that case, I think I did enough. I think by saying, you know what, that family, they are messed up. Stay away. So that is, again, if I would say nothing, that would be listening to Iver Lotitein Mishol. If I say nothing, now again, there is some discussion on the Gemara Moikana has four or five different reasons, and do the reasons agree or disagree? There's like a whole literature that we could get into, but that is enough. Hi, Yitzchak.
How can that case where you really don't think you have enough information to give them?
Okay, so if I really don't think I have enough information, what I should do is say, listen, I have reason to be suspicious. I don't know for sure, but I think it's worth investigating. Say exactly what you know, exactly how you know it. Right? Now, if I'm a bystander, if I was asked a question, so I could say, I'm not sure. If I'm just a third party, and I would be the Good Samaritan and walk over to people who are like schmoozing in the social on the Friday night and say, you know what? I have reason to suspect, I'm not exactly sure why, but I have reason to suspect that. I don't think that's a good idea. No? If you're a bystander and you're not asked, only get involved if you really know. But if they ask you a question and you don't really know, say what you know, say what you don't know. Speak it all out. That's what it seems to me. Now, what?
Like this past week, someone from the show came asked me, there's this speaker that you know, apparently know, do you think they're a good speaker to bring to the show? And my response was, it's been years, so I don't remember them really speaking much. Here's a YouTube video that you could hear them speak.
Okay.
But yeah. I have reached
again, so here's the other thing. The Chafetz Chaim distinguishes between things which are objectively bad and things which are matters of taste and matters of choice. Now, something is objectively bad for the Chafetz Chaim if someone is not Someone is an apikoris. Someone doesn't believe in God. That's objectively bad, Chafetz Chaim says. Okay, got it. Someone has violated things, ended up in jail, has real problems. These are objectively bad things. Some things, like, is the person a good speaker or not? Does the person sing well or not sing well? There's certain things which I don't think are objective categories at all, and those things obviously should not be said. You know what? You're an adult. Make your own decision. You want to know is the person... Like, I never understood. Like, when sometimes someone would ask me about, like, a shidduch, and they'd ask, is the guy good looking? I'm like, go out with him! Figure it out! Well, you're asking me if someone is good looking? I'm not going there. Right? And, like, so... I think...
I mean, these days, you could probably...
You can find that on Facebook, you can find that information. Now that's a very important thing also. The Chafetz Chaim writes that if someone asks you a question that they could easily find out on their own, so then you should not say. For example, the Chafetz Chaim gives an example which is an interesting thing. A young woman wants to go out with a guy who's a Torah scholar. She asks, is the guy a Torah scholar? So, what do you say? I don't know. Now, you can say, I don't know. Why? Because you could find out if the guy's a Torah scholar. Ask the local rabbi to sit down with the guy and give him a bechina. Right? That's what the Chafetz Chaim writes. Now, in our world, I don't know if it works like that. I don't know if it works like that in our world. But what you can do is, like, try to get to the bottom of the question. You want to know, is the guy a Torah scholar? What does that mean? Are you looking for someone who's going to be the next Gadol Hadar? Are you looking for someone who just learns every day? Are you looking for someone who learns once a year, but I can make sense out of the page of Gemara? Do you assume that the page of Gemara doesn't matter? It's just, can you read a Rashi on Chumash? Do you assume that it doesn't matter if you can read Rashi on Chumash? Do you listen to Shi'urim on YU Torah? Whatever it is, right? Different people have different definitions, right, of things. And sometimes, so the same word, right, this, right, the same, what's it called, a homophone or a homonym, right? The same word means different things at different times to different people.
It could mean, it might mean, I want to marry somebody in suburban Colo for X number of
years. Right, it could mean that, it could mean something else. Find out. Right? In other words, when someone asks that type of question, like, get to the bottom of what they're asking. There's no objective answers in these situations. Danny?
We discussed Lashon Hara in Shidduchim. How about lying in Shidduchim?
Oh, okay. So I have a whole other shiur that I give about lying.
I'm running a shiur. I say the girl is 29 when she's really...
Okay, so the brief answer that I have... Okay, yes. So Rabbi Usher Weiss has a tshuva where he says that a small lie is permitted in Shidduchim, and he defines a small lie as like the difference between 29 and 30, and someone has like an arbitrary cutoff. I'm not going to go out with anyone who's 30, only 29. You're allowed to lie and say it's 29, because you can assess that later on the person's going to be happy, oh, it's so cute, she really was 31, ha 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 ha. Right? That's what Basher Weiss has said. I am not... It seems to me that we have to be as factually accurate as we possibly can. He brings a raya from a Gemara Baba Basra, Leiv, Almana Aranin, etc. Usually, I gave that shiur, I think, 3 years ago in Stern College. You could probably hear it on YU Torah, about lying in Shidduchim. Different conversation. Let's just talk about the timing issue. Timing issue is very important. You see... If I tell, everyone has their own peckle. Everyone has their own little package of flaws. And if you are completely transparent, we have a world that believes in complete transparency, but we don't. Right? We don't. I know that sunlight is the best disinfectant, I know all these things, but there is a lot that we don't know. If I'm going to begin my romantic relationships, or my potentially romantic relationships, by saying, you should know, I have difficulty sleeping at night, and I go really nuts in the morning when I don't sleep, and before I have my morning coffee, I'm just a disaster and a half, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, like, I have a lot of negative things about me, and people are going to say, why on earth would I want to go out with that guy? I could get a perfect person. And this guy, again, obviously, there's no such thing. We know that. But if I divulge, one of my friends, David Bashefkin, actually, is a big fan of having honest resumes. And the honest resume that he talks about is how you should put on your resume, I applied for 5 positions and I was rejected for the following reasons. Well, why don't people do that? I'll tell you why they don't do that. Because if you put an honest thing on your resume, ain't no one ever going to hire you. And if you're fully honest, right, about Shidduchim, and you fully say, you know what? I have all of these problems.
Okay? Fail fast, as we say.
Run fast. Run the other way.
Fail fast. It's like we say, I hear it in software development. There might be in other places.
So fail
like,
fast?
There's a problem. You want to know.
You want to know right away.
You want your code to break first instead of later after you've deployed it.
So
and then people find the bugs after they've already...
So it's possible, but you're in a much better chance. Again, now we're talking about a person revealing his or her own flaws. You have a much better chance to develop a good relationship when you don't reveal your flaws on the first date. Reb Moshe Feinstein over here has a tshuva. It's written over here, Teshuva Lepnuya Shezinso, a young woman who slept around. So the question is, at what point does she tell the guy, by the way, I've been sexually active? What? At what point do you...
Why is it necessary unless, what, he's a Kohen or something? I mean,
okay, this is...
Nowadays, when they don't get married until they're 30, sorry.
Again, this is in 1976. Okay. I don't know the family background over here. But someone asked her, Moshe Feinstein, she says, at what point in my dating do I tell the guy that, you know, I've had many boyfriends. I've slept around. At what point do you say it?
After they're married.
After they're married, maybe. And Moshe feels that you... Right, I had an abortion, something. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. And you could say, like Yitzhak, you asked a question before, at what point do we assume this stuff is in the past? If it's really in the past, maybe I never have to say anything. And you know what? He'll never know. Right? Or... he'll never know. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff I could have done wrong, and people just won't know about it.
Not in a world where there are sexually transmitted diseases.
Okay.
Just saying.
I mean, that,
any internet.
I was careful. I know I'm okay.
Oh, God.
Whatever.
Everybody else
we're going to try to keep this rated G for the next 5 minutes. But no, yes. Yes, you're right. Hi, Yitzhak. Okay, so again,
people will put the what is the
so generally speaking, we do a if a woman had relations and the husband knows it, the husband can obligate himself to a standard besula ksuba. The only thing is that if the woman had relations with a non-Jew, potentially, so then she is going to be forbidden to marry a Kohen, so then we don't do a psula ksuba. I actually have a separate ksuba that I do here in the shul. I do it for many people, because it's a ksuba, I call it a itza ksuba, just as this woman, it doesn't discuss anything of her biology, it just says... right, this woman, I put together this text with Rav Schechter. I use this a lot. I think it solves a lot of embarrassment issues. I use it for a gioris also. Sometimes of someone who converted is embarrassed that like everyone is going to hear under the ksuba that someone's so converted and no one knew it beforehand. So this text that I use is just clear across the board. At the RCA convention, a couple of, after the Freundel thing, happens that all the women...
Well, how much do you put on it? Because people will hear the amount.
Right, so I do 200 because you're obligating yourself to 200.
Oh, okay.
What do you mean, 200?
200 zuzim. If you want to know how much 200 zuzim is worth, nobody knows.
What happened at the RCA convention?
So the RCA convention a few years ago, remember after Freundel, the RCA established this whole commission with a few women who themselves were victims of Freundel, and they became the ombudsman, and they established a whole policy. So it happens that like one of the great Mount Sinai moments was that all three women who spoke at the RCA convention were congregants or former congregants here in the shul. I had married two of them, not myself. I was the Masada Kedushin, and like one of them spoke about how happy she was that she was a Gioris, and that we didn't use the Gioris Ksuba, that we used a different Ksuba, so this was something that I got props for. So Moshe over here discusses that you shouldn't reveal your damaging information right at the beginning of your dating career. You hold it off a little bit until you establish a relationship. And then, again, this is just sound advice. Now, obviously, you don't want to hide things, right? Think about the resentfulness that people will have, that they think they were completely duped. I can't believe that, I don't know, like... fill in the blanks, right? That can make people kind of upset, so you don't want to do that. You want to be straightforward and tell the truth, but you want to do so in a way that won't damage yourself too much. Another element that comes up, and I think we'll close with this, is there is a prohibition in the Torah that I'm not allowed to reveal secrets. If I know secret information about so-and-so, I know stuff that no one else knows. I'm not supposed to reveal secrets. In one of the Svarim on the Chofetz Chaim, called the Chalkas Binyamin by Rabbi Binyamin Cohen, who lives in Flatbush now, he argues that the Rambam includes the prohibition of revealing secrets under the general heading of Lashon Hara. And that means that just like Lashon Hara is permitted for Toelas, so revealing secrets is also permitted for Toelas. I know a bit of information that no one else knows about this person. But you know, that information is going to be very germane very relevant to their potential marriage partner. There's no prohibition of revealing a secret. Now again, if there are legal consequences, if I know the information because I'm a therapist, and I have, in my line of work, we call it clergy penitent privilege. In other lines of work, it's just confidentiality. You're not allowed to say stuff that you hear in the office, unless there's a clear and present danger to somebody else. Kisser Shidduchim probably not a clear and present danger. We're not talking about that someone's going to pick up a pistol and go and blow the heads off of 80 people. We're not talking about that. So, are you allowed to reveal it? That's a very hard question when there's legal issues of confidentiality. But if I, as a neighbor, if I, as a relative, I know some secrets about somebody, so he argues that you're allowed to tell them in the shidduch context because of the toelas, because of the positive purpose involved in the telling.
Who is it that says that?
Rabbi Binyamin Cohen in his Sefer Chalkas Binyamin on the Chofetz Chaim. Yeah, Yitzchak?
Forgetting legal in America.
Can you just speak louder?
I'm saying forgetting legal in America, from a pure halakha standpoint, if someone has a confidential question to ask a rabbi, are they allowed to make the assumption that they can ask them safely, or is it something that...
Again, so as a matter of halakha, if I tell you something in confidence, you're not allowed to repeat it.
But even if the law, so if I come to you and say I'm considering X, Y, and Z, what's the halakha stand for that, and that's driven into something else...
Again, if there's potential loss, so then you have an obligation to say it. You have to balance the cases very seriously, but yeah. Two other issues about Toelas that are worth thinking about. Toelas, this idea that's permitted to speak Lashon Hara, it's a mitzvah to speak Lashon Hara for permitted situations. It's also permitted to listen to Lashon Hara in a for a permitted benefit. So if you're a therapist, obviously you can listen to Lashon Hara, and that's what they do all day. That should be fine. Are you allowed to say Lashon Hara to your spouse? I have a bad day at work. Then! Am I allowed to say what my evil, awful, disgusting, despicable boss did? Am I allowed to vent? So Rav Schachter says yes. Rav Schachter holds that you're allowed to vent. Now, there is a little bit of a question as to whether venting is actually psychologically beneficial. And there might be different types of venting, etc. But the funny thing about Lashon Hara is that there's no heter just because I'm in a family context that I'm allowed to speak Lashon Hara. The Torah's paradigm of Lashon Hara is Aharon and Miriam spoke about Moshe. Right? In other words, even in the family context, Lashon Hara is forbidden. But if there's a real benefit, I have to unload. If I'm not going to unload, I'm going to explode. Hey, let's be honest. There are some days that if I'm not going to talk about what happened, I'm just going to have to take my head and bang it against the wall a few times. And there's a Yiddish expression about that. Gay hats a cup and buns. Right? That's what you're going to have to do. End of conversation. Yeah.
Okay, I totally get that about venting to your spouse. And I'm glad you said that. But I've had this experience myself. Actually. Someone once told me something pretty bad about somebody else, and I decided, you know what, that person did not tell my husband this piece of information, and I never told him, because I didn't think it was, it would have been really Lashon Hara, and I'm not sorry.
And I've had cases when people confided in me some really bad stuff about someone else just because they had to. Now again, there are halachos, like do I believe it as a fact or not? I remember someone came to me with like really, really damaging information about someone else, and the person, like, and it was really hard. It was really hard to, you know, on the one hand, affirm what this guy is saying. This guy was like totally shaken when he heard this information. As a matter of halacha, am I allowed to believe the information? It turned out it was all true. It turned out it became very public. But these are very hard questions. Now, again, I think this brings us back to the point that Frieda made at the beginning. You know, should our perspective be that Lashon Hara is forbidden and we have to kind of dray around and come up? And that's more of the Chofetz Chaim perspective. I'd say that the Chazon Ish's perspective is that whatever is toelas is permitted, and that should be the perspective that we start with. And this is very different ways of looking at all these issues, but these are things to think about. Okay, just one scheduling word. Next Wednesday night is the 12th of January. So I have the 12th of June, thank you. So I have a cousin's wedding, so I won't be able to give shiur, but on the 19th we'll begin. I am thinking of not doing Lashon Hara more. I think like we may have exhausted Lashon Hara. Although if people want more, I have a lot more to say. So email me, call me, send a carrier pigeon or an owl.
You know, the thing is,